Hello, and welcome to Bicycle Talk on July 27th, 2016. My name is Ron, or Pedlin Ron, here at Bicycle Talk. I am here to talk to you about the upcoming news in cycling, bicycle culture. We talk all about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. I'm here with my co-host, Fran Storch, who is just waving at me right now, which is very nice. I'm going to go over a couple of different things here today. First of all, if you have anything that you would like to share with us, you can call or text us at 860-486-9487. Or you can send an email, if you're listening to this by podcast, to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. And I look forward to hearing anything from any of you out there. If you want something discussed in the future and you have some ideas, please send them on over and we shall talk. A couple of quick shout-outs. One to my friend Bob from Spin Class, because he's deep into his pack tour right now. He's on day 7, I think, right now. And he is riding his bicycle across the country, averaging about 116 miles a day. Yes, folks, 116 a day. That's a lot of miles. That's a lot of riding. But anyway, it is a supported tour, and he is on his way back from Washington, and he's heading in this direction. Another shout-out goes out once again to Mike Beatty from Mansfield, who is riding his bicycle around the perimeter of the U.S., and he's bringing awareness and attention to feeding our vets, because our vets are not taken care of very well in this country. So he's trying to make a point here, and he's raising money. And he is currently in Rugby, North Dakota. He's the last place that he was 19 hours ago, and he's in the geographical center of North America. That's where he is, and there's a nice little statue there and something that he posted on his Facebook page, and you can follow Mike on Facebook, and it's pretty cool. So he's doing a lot of really good things, and he is, he's got to be deep in, well over 12, I don't know, he's getting close to 12,000 miles. He's way up there. And then so if you want to know more about what he's doing, you can go to www.feedourvets.org. And if you want to know more about Mike, you /news/Mike-Beatty, B-E-A-T-T-I-E dash biking, and you will find him. You will find his feed. So you can kind of check out and see how Mike is progressing. And it seems like he's really having a great time, and he's really bringing a lot of awareness out there, and he's raising some money for the vets, which is really a nice thing. The last thing on my list of wrap-up is Tour de France. The Tour de France is over. Fran, the Tour de France is over. We're going through withdrawal at our house because we have no more Tour de France, which is unfortunate, but, that's what we have to do. It's all wrapped up. They finished up on Sunday. They did the Grand Parade, and it really is a parade, into Paris, and it starts out as it's actually probably one of the lightest days in the Tour, because everybody's just kind of, they just race their bikes for 20 days. They're tired. They're, the relief is there. The stress has been lifted. There's still going to be a big sprint at the end when they come into Paris, because they have to put on the big show when they come into Paris. But for the most part, they're joking with one another. I have a picture at home of many, many years ago when they're, drinking. They had a big bottle, and they're just passing bottles. Sometimes they pass bottles of champagne around while they're riding in. Sometimes they just, toast each other, toasting the yellow jersey and the other jerseys that are in there. So it's kind of a big parade. They generally go pretty easy. There's a couple of little points areas along the way. There might be a chance for somebody to make a change in that race, but pretty much it is predetermined before they come into Paris, except for the finishing sprint. And that finishing sprint could lead to the, changing of the jersey for the points jersey, depending on how close and tight that race is. But anyway, it's all over. It's all over. It's such a sad thing. The final tally here is that Chris Froome from Great Britain is the number one. He is the winner of the Tour de France. The closest to him, it was a real big stretch this year. Actually, not big. Four minutes and 5 seconds back would be your second place finisher. And that would be, let's make sure I get them all right here. This is Romain Bardet, and he is from France. And now it's a big deal because the French don't usually get up on the podium. And so this is a very, very big deal that a Frenchman was on the podium. The third place finisher was Nairo Quintana. He was down 4:21. So the difference between second place and third place was less than 15. It was 15 seconds. It's like really, really close. Now, I think about that. 15 seconds over 21 days, 22 days of riding. That's kind of remarkable. And then the next one, which is, again, between third and fourth, 4:21 down on third, 4:42 down on fourth, and that would be Adam Yates. And then Chris Froome's old teammate, Richie Porte, was fifth, and Richie is now riding for the BMC racing team. So that's what happened there with that. The end results were basically the yellow jersey goes to Chris Froome, and the green jersey, or the sprinter's jersey, went to Peter Sagan. The polka dot jersey went to Rafael Majka. And the white jersey, which is for the rookie of the tour, or the newer person in the tour, newer rider in the tour, went to Adam Yates, who finished really well. We've got to keep our eyes on Adam Yates. He's going to be a big deal in a few years. You watch. Adam Yates is a big deal. He's coming out. Another British rider. What's going on in Great Britain with bicycle riding? There's all these great guys. And okay, the final winner at the Champs-Élysées, and what you have to understand is they come into Paris and they go into the Champs-Élysées, and it's this big festival downtown. My sister calls me one day, and I'm talking to her on the phone, and she said, Ron, I'm in Paris. And I said, yeah, I knew you were going to France. She goes, we're here for the finish of the Tour de France. And I went, really? And she said, oh my God. She said, this is so incredibly exciting. I can't believe it. There's bicycles flying by us. And, you know, for someone who's never seen it before, it's a pretty big deal. So it's kind of a neat thing. But she was all excited, and she couldn't believe she was there. And I said, please bring home souvenirs. Please, please, please. And, you know, you're seeing a remarkable event. And the winner this year was Andre Greipel. And Andre had an amazing sprint at the end. He changed his bike three times before he rode into Paris. And I'm not quite sure why he did that, but he seemed to be having some problems with his bicycle. So he changed his bike three times. But apparently he picked the right bike because the right bike crossed the line before everybody else did. And it was a very exciting finishing sprint. They come into Paris and they go around and around and around a bunch of times before the final sprint. So that kind of gives them the big fast parade, and all the teams are working really hard and trying to go real fast. Speaking of teams, the Movistar team was the number one team in the tour. So combining all of those, right, that's the one that second place finisher or third place finisher rides for, and you take the combination of all of the riders' times and put it together, and they were the fastest one. And the super combative rider of the tour is also the world champion, Peter Sagan. So he ended up with that at the very end. That's it for the Tour de France, folks. Sorry, we're going to have to put this one to bed until next year, and we'll be back on that. And I'll talk about some of the other great races, too, because it's pretty exciting. It's kind of a neat thing. So anyway, moving from the tour, I want to talk about something rather interesting, which obviously we're in the political scheme of things right now, and we've had the Republican National Convention, and we've had the Democrat. Now we're in the middle of the Democratic National Convention. So what's politics got to do with bicycles? Oh my God, everything, of course. So here's why I decided to bring this up. The Republican National Convention this year was a very, let's say, what shall I say, exciting event because there were a lot of emotions that were happening around the Republican National Convention. There are some people that are running for office who are controversial, and there are protests because of that. And, you know, it's really kind of interesting to see. So here you have all these people coming in. You've got people that are for one of the candidates very heavily, and then you have other people that are strongly opposed to that candidate. How do you keep them all under control? And this was a big, big deal. So we've got a situation where the city of Cleveland was looking at how do we keep this together? Well, they ended up bringing in some additional riders to do this too, but they did it with bicycles. Get this, they used bicycles for crowd control. So what I'd like to talk about today on the show is I would like to talk about the use of bicycles for law enforcement and for security and other various things that you can use a bicycle for and the effectiveness of that. If anyone is out there listening who's in law enforcement and who has done a bicycle patrol, please, please don't hesitate on calling me. Again, it's 860-486-9487. You can call or text, or you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Anyway, I would love to hear from you because I'm fascinated by this. I had a friend years ago who worked for a bicycle company that I also worked for, and he was the New York City rep for that particular company. And he sold a lot of bicycles to the police department in New York City. And he also had some pretty good bicycle skills. So he would train these officers as to how to ride their bicycles in difficult situations. Mostly they're using mountain bikes. That seems to be the basic rule as far as that goes, because it's a pretty durable machine. And he was teaching them how to ride downstairs on them and how to ride upstairs on them, you know, because you're in the city streets. So you've got this, if you're going to be in pursuit of someone, you need to know how to handle those skills. From this point, of course, everything's really progressed and there's actual schools for this, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But boy, it's just amazing what you can do with a bicycle when you're a police officer. The big thing that I found, and I have talked to a number of bicycle police officers that are out there, big shout out to you guys, by the way. I am thrilled with the whole idea. It's a great way for law to enforce the law. The big thing that they talk about, every single one of them says the same thing. It humanizes them. Why does it humanize them? Because they're not hiding behind the cruiser. And the cruiser is it's an effective tool. Obviously, there are times when a bicycle is just certainly not going to be fast enough, and it's certainly not going to work out as well. But my God, look at this. It is a tool where you have a human being who is, yes, a police officer, officer of the law. He is there. He has a weapon with him. He is protected for sure. And he is out to protect you, but you can approach them. And that's what they say also about police officers who are on horses, that they're far more approachable than the police officers that are in cars. Same thing for, remember the old cop walked the beat? That was a thing that police officers did years ago. They would actually walk through the streets, and I don't know if they even still do this anymore. They've really kind of gone into this whole car mode, which gives them an air of, I don't know exactly how to say it. It's just, it doesn't make them friendly. And so, you know, you kind of, even when you're, you know, riding your bicycle down the road or you're driving your car down the road, you see a police car, you kind of get a feeling, you know, there's something that's a little unnerving about it. But when they're on a bicycle, you feel like you just want to go up and talk to them. Hey, how's it going? Wow, it's really cool. You're using a bike to do the police job. That's really great. And you'll see them often in smaller towns like our town here in Mansfield. You will see them doing events. So if there is like an outdoor event that's going on, they'll pull out the bicycles for that because it's easier for them to work around a big crowd when they're on a bicycle. They can see a lot more, they can get places easier, and it's a contained area and a contained event. So here's what happens. In Cleveland, they decided that they really needed to get a handle on this because they knew they were going to have a lot of problems. They were going to have people that were really far on the right, they were going to be yelling and screaming, and people really far on the left politically, they're going to be yelling and screaming, and they were concerned that there was going to be a problem with them getting into an altercation outside of the Republican National Convention. So they put these guys on bikes, and it was really cool because what happened is there were some crowd control issues. Obviously, some people were yelling terrible things about people's sexual preferences on one side, and then there were other people that were there from the Black Lives Matter movement, and there were people that were feeling rather, I shouldn't say this, but I will, rather white and right, and they got into some major shouting matches out on the streets. The police would just get in between them with the bicycles. They actually used the bicycles. They would get off the bicycles, place the bike in front of them, and they would walk, pushing the crowd back, saying, "Move back, move back." They were chanting it, and everyone was just moving back. They actually used their bike as like a shield. And then if they, once they got that contained and everything was fine, if they had another call, they would go off to another spot and they would do the same thing. It was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. Those bicycles, by the way, a police cruiser is a very expensive piece of equipment. The bicycles, with all their equipment, with the extra, the different clothing that the bicycle police officer is using, the helmets, the special equipment, they had the bags on their bikes and all, they range a couple $1,000s a piece in their cost. So it's a much less costly way of maintaining your police force in your town too, and still getting great results. So the officers that I've talked to, again, they just say that the police biking, they love it because people just walk up to them, they talk to them. And then I got into a conversation. So, but you know, you're on a bike. I mean, what are your chances of actually, you know, making an arrest? And they say that everyone I've talked to said that the arrest and conviction rate goes up when they use bicycles versus cars. Why is that? Well, if someone dives down a back alley, okay, and you're in a city, you can't drive the cruiser down the back alley because it won't fit. The bicycle follows them right through. They can follow through. They can catch people off guard. They can actually ride right up to them. If they're running away, they can ride faster than they're running. They can then, you know, they can then approach the person that they're trying to stop or arrest or question, and it's much easier for them to get personal contact. So that's kind of a cool thing. The other thing is that because they're on bicycles, they're actually very stealth-like because they're just kind of riding their bikes around. So if they're looking for a problem that might be occurring, they will they'll actually be able to sneak up on certain situations. Now, the sophisticated criminals, of course, they figured it all out. And they use whistles. Get this. I just read this a little while ago. They actually use a whistle system that tells that there is a mobile or a bicycle-related police officer in the area. And that's how they break up whatever they might be doing. So, but the police officers are trained to listen to this. So they hear the whistles and they know that they've been found, and then they can kind of swoop in with a combination of bicycles and cars, and they can take care of the problem. So it's just a really neat thing, and it really came to light at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland because they were making these great barriers, and it was just amazing to watch. And there are a few videos online that you can look at, which will show exactly how it was done. It was quite impressive. So this is kind of a neat thing. So what do you do? What do you do to become a bike cop? That's kind of a neat thing, right? What a great idea. So First of all, obviously, you have to be fairly fit. Well, hopefully, if you're a police officer, you're fairly fit anyway. And I'm sure that you would want to try to keep your fitness up because it would seem to be a good strategy should you ever have to get out of that car and chase someone down. So you have an organization which is the IPMBA. That is the International Police Mountain Bike Association. And you can look them up online, too. That's ipmba.org. And you can go to their website, and it'll tell you all about different things, like why bike training for police. And the big things are, again, there is a cost involved with a patrol car. It costs a lot of money. Fuel costs a lot of money. Bicycles are greener. They definitely are better as far as both the environment and also as the the cost of maintenance is far, far less. When my friend Kevin was working in the city, they used to have actual precincts that had bicycle mechanics working there, and they would just maintain the bikes. So they had a complete repair facilities just for their bicycles. They started out by using bicycle shops at first, and there are a lot of small communities. I know around here, I think our local bicycle shop maintains some of the university bikes and the town of Mansfield bikes. But so you can use your local bike shop for that. But if you get into a big city, they actually have precincts that have bicycle repair facilities within them so they can take care of the bikes, just like they would take care of the cars. So anyway, it's very, very, very cost effective, which is a great thing. And, it's everyone knows how to ride a bike, right? And yeah, except when they don't. But that's okay. But there are a lot of people that grew up on bicycles, and this is why to get on a bike and become a bike cop is kind of a cool thing. I remember talking to an officer down in the city of New Haven when I was at a bicycle shop down there a couple of years ago, and he was a bicycle police officer. And he loved it. He just absolutely loved it. And New Haven has a lot of bikes, and they use them all the time. It's a pretty flat city, so it's pretty easy to get around in. And there's a lot of neighborhoods in New Haven, and there's a lot of trouble down there that they have to work with. So they decided that bicycles were the answer. He said that he had been an officer for a couple of years and was just really enjoying it because he's also an avid cyclist. So when he's not a bicycle cop, he is also just an advocate for riding his bike. He loves to ride his bike. He loves to do it for fitness. So it really worked great for him because it was like the best of both worlds. He got to do his job, but he got to do it on a bicycle, and it was just a wonderful thing. He said people just came up to him and approached him. He got to know more people in the neighborhoods he was patrolling because he was so, so approachable. He said it was wonderful. And he also said that there was a waiting list at the New Haven Police Department for police officers that wanted to be bike cops, that wanted to get out of their cars and get out there and do that. And it's just, it's incredible. It's just they have learned so much from this bicycle policing. And I just think that it's, time that we look at a lot more of this. When you get into the bigger cities, when you get into Hartford, you get into New Haven, you get into Bridgeport, it just makes a lot more sense to be running your police departments with bicycles. 10 advantages of a bicycle patrol. We have a list here of different things why you'd want to do this. Improved community relations, cost savings, faster office response times, environmental benefits are just some of the reasons that campuses, also college campuses, are using them, and their public safety officers are on bikes. But first of all, bikes are less threatening than patrol vehicles. The novelty of a police officer on a bike is often enough to start overcoming the negative perceptions that some members of a culturally diverse campus population have about law enforcement. So what you have is just, again, as I was mentioning before, you have a much more approachable situation here. most of the negative attributes associated with vehicle patrol officers, flashing lights, double parking, noticeable wait times, arriving to the scene, or attending to an issue are not associated with bicycle officers. As a result, those who come in contact with bike officers may be more cooperative and willing to listen. So again, they can negotiate better with the people they're talking to having to deal with in a negative way, but they can talk to them a lot more with a better response. Other bicyclists are more accepting of bike patrol officers. There's another one here. You can connect with a police officer on different levels of the patrol. I mean, obviously, you know, we ride bikes. If I see a police officer on a bike and I'm out riding my bike, sure, I'm going to ride up to him. I'm going to chat with him. I'm going to ask him how he likes it. I do it all the time because that's how I have some of this information, because I do a lot of personal interviewing. And, you know, you find out a lot of times that when I was working for that company that my friend Kevin was working for, and he was training the officers, we had a sales meeting down in New Jersey, and we had a big ride that went off, and these two guys showed up on the ride, and I didn't recognize them because they didn't work for the company that I knew, but they were wearing these New York City bicycle police jerseys. And I said, "So who are these guys?" And they introduced me, and they said, "Well, these guys, they race their bikes." I said, "They race their bikes?" And they said, "Yeah, they're patrolling officers in New York City, and they also race bicycles. And there's a whole bicycle racing team that's based around some of the riders that are police officers." And they were strong. I got to admit, they were a tough ride, but it was a lot of fun because I got to talk with them, and I got to spend some time with them and ride with them on a more personal level, which was great. And the camaraderie that the police officers build on bicycles is important to the community-oriented policing. Bicycle patrols result in more than twice as many contacts with the public than with vehicle patrols. How about that? So you're going to be able to, again, communicate with your public. You're going to get to know who the good guys and the bad guys are. You're going to get to know what their habits are, because you're going to see them a lot more because you're on a bicycle. So that's another one. Bicycles, police, / security uniforms help officers to quickly transition from their traditional law enforcement duties to a more service-oriented work. And there it is, service-oriented. These are public servants. That's what police officers are. They've got a tough job. They got a really tough job out there. But if they can soften it by doing it with a bicycle, what a great idea. A lot of times you'll see a police officer and he'll be in uniform, but he'll be wearing more of a polo shirt. It won't be as much of a uniform as you would see from someone who is sitting in a patrol car. The other thing is that their clothing tends to be a more breathable clothing. It's specialty clothing. It's actually made to make them comfortable when they're out there riding their bikes on patrol. And then here's another one. Perpetrators don't notice bike patrols. They don't see them. They don't see them coming. And yes, some of them have smartened up. Some of them have figured it out. But a bicycle patrol officer will relate a story after story of riding up to crimes in progress, unnoticed or unrecognized by the perpetrators until the very last moment. And then they've got them. And from that point, you know, they all carry radios on them, so they can radio to a car or other officers that are out on duty, and they can pretty much take care of the problem they need to take care of. Bike patrols can go where traditional patrol vehicles can't. And this is what I said before. This is another one of those things where if somebody dashes into a dark alley somewhere or a very narrow street that you can't get a car down, generally speaking, the patrol car would have to stop. The officer would have to get out of the car. Then the officer would have to run after that particular perpetrator, and they'd have to chase them down. And a good chance is that once they dive into the alley, you're not going to be able to catch them. So there's also another big thing is there's a number of university and college campuses that are characterized by being a car-free zone. Clusters of buildings with limited vehicle access, constant construction. Hey, we have that going on at UConn right now. Events of all kinds, texting pedestrians, and people skateboarding or even bicycling into traffic. So taking a call in a motor vehicle takes a great deal of time, and often the car can't access a remote location, or it's blocked by the pedestrians or other barriers. And as for events, you see this all the time because, you know, the events are heavily populated with people. So it's much easier to get around on the bicycle. You can't just drive your car down the middle of a crowded street where there's a big event going on. You just can't do it. But the bicycle, you can weave your way in and out. You can work your way through. It's really interesting. Bicycle officers can use all of their senses to detect illegal activity. This is something that we notice when we're riding our bikes outside. When we're riding our bikes outside and we're riding up this beautiful road, let's backing up. I'll back up to just before the Mountain Laurel came out this year. We do a ride up to the Mountain Laurel, which are very beautiful. The wild roses come out. You can smell them. You can smell all of nature around you. And you can also smell things that might be illegal going on the streets. So you can use your senses a lot better. And it'll lead them to areas where crimes may be committed. So it's really, really great. And so this here's a quote from an officer who was a Lewisburg police officer. He describes his apprehension of a suspect, saying, "As I began to ride past a building, a Bucknell University public safety car pulled alongside. Right then, I heard something in the bushes." That's right. I heard something that the officer in the car would never have heard. So there it is. You can hear rustling in the bushes. You can hear, someone kicking something or whatever. But you can use your senses so much better when you're outside of the vehicle. And then the bicycles have other uses, too. Targeting and enforcement and surveillance, traffic enforcement, keeping public order. That was what was used in Cleveland, was the public order. That worked really, really well for them. They really had very, very few incidents at that convention, and it was really built up to be, it was going to be a big problem. It was going to be a very big problem. So this was good. The officers, you know, if they work together, they could stand next to one another. They are trained to hold up their bicycles at chest level by standing next to one another. And then when a command is given, the bicycle officers march as one unit with a very sturdy, very light bicycle frame, using it as a shield. And that's what they did in Cleveland. It's really, really cool. Bicycles cost much less to purchase and maintain than traditional patrol cars. Well, duh. That's a big DUH, as we like to say with Fran. They have it written here as a bicycle costs around $1,000. But then when you fully outfit that bicycle and the officer with the proper clothing and shoes and everything, the bags and all, it can come close to right around a few thousand dollars worth of investment in something like that. So that's going to be... That's going to be a bonus too, because it is less on the taxpayers. So that's a good thing. Bikes provide environmental and health benefits. Hey, who wants to stay healthy by doing their job? What a great thing! So there's just all types of benefits here as far as why you would want to have a bicycle patrol in your neighborhood and why you would want to have them maybe in your community. So if you're thinking about this, if you're listening to the podcast and you're thinking about and you're a bicycle person and you are a member of a police force, it's time to sit down and have a conversation about this. You know, talk to your selectmen, or talk to your the other officers, talk to your boss, and see what they have to say about this. There are so many positive stories about the arrest and conviction rates being up by a very large percentage, to just the fact that you're perceived in a much, much better light. It's really the right way to go, and it just certainly makes a lot more sense. So anyway, big tip of the hat to Cleveland for making this happen. They did not have enough officers to do what they needed to do for the convention. So there were a lot of officers that came in from other cities that were practiced and trained to do this bicycle policing. And they really had a great success with this. So anyway, bike patrol and other tips of the hat to anyone who works in the police department. I mean, you guys have a tough job, and I think it's great doing it this way. The there's a patrol officer here that is in Lexington, Kentucky, and being a police officer was not his first choice for his career. His decision was not completely out of the blue, as both his father and uncle were police officers in his home state of Washington. When he was looking for a job after graduating from Southern Virginia University, Davis said it seemed like an obvious fallback. I felt comfortable with the choice. Growing up with a lot of different people in my life were officers, so it wasn't completely out of the normal. And then he was given the opportunity to use a bicycle, and he loves it. He said he is an ambassador to the people of his town. And it's, you know, these are all really crazy stories. He does make a note here, not a lazy cop's assignment. No, it's not, because if you're riding uphill at night, all night during a 12-hour shift, it can be exhausting. And Lexington's bike patrol officers are expected to remain physically fit and train on their own. So get this, one of the requirements for, you know, being a bicycle police officer is to go ride your bike. What a great thing. So if you're, and we know this for a fact, we have a friend of ours, shout out to Eddie in Manchester for being a fellow cyclist of ours, and he rides with us often. And he does stay very fit because of that, and that's a good thing. The other thing to note, if these officers are out and they're riding on, let's say they're out riding on these big group rides, and you're driving your vehicle down the road, you're a person in car, and you encounter a lot of people on bicycles, you might keep it in mind that one of those people on bicycles could possibly be a police officer. Don't forget, and lose your cool when you get behind a group of cyclists and you're feeling like, you know, you're feeling very, very impatient. You never know who's sitting in the middle of that group. And, you know, I've had this conversation with my friend Eddie, and he said, you know, they just don't get it. They don't understand. I'm a police officer. You know, they just, for them to go off on us like this is really kind of a foolish thing. Because what's Eddie doing at first? He's looking at the license plate. He's remembering the vehicle. He's taking all the pertinent information, and he's registering it all. And he's getting ready to, you know, to make a phone call if he has to have the problem solved. So remember, those police officers, they're everywhere. They're everywhere. Bicyclists are people, too. So just make sure you keep your eyes open out there on the road. And I'll always keep asking for the respect from the motorists, and I'll always ask the cyclists to respect the to respect the cars too. Just everybody needs to get along here. That's the way it works. So how do you start a bicycle patrol unit? I kind of started touching base on this one a little bit earlier, and there obviously is that group that I talked about, which is the Mountain Bicycle Policemen's Association that you can go to. But there's, you know, clearly you have to figure out if there's funding for it. So you're going to have to approach your department head about that and see if something like that can be fit in. And you can, and then, you know, you have to figure out what it takes to put a budget together, and you have to, you know, you definitely have to make the presentation, to your superiors about, you know, a bicycle patrol officer is very quiet and stealthy, and they can work patrol and they'll be on top of a crime before a criminal realizes it. And even with the rear hub on the bicycle clicking as it goes along, they still never realize it was a cop approaching, because a lot of people ride bicycles in cities. So, you know, hearing a bicycle coming up on you, you're not alerted to it like you are if you hear a car coming up. You hear a car coming up, you're going to turn, you're going to look, you're going to see who it is in the car. If it's got lights on the top of it, you know that you're doing something wrong and you need to stop doing it or get out of there. But the Los Angeles Police Department officers on bicycle patrol write more tickets than those in cars. How about that? So there you go again. You've got the ability to, you know, that's that goes back with the arrest and conviction rate being much higher than you are if you're in a car. Everybody feels they can approach a bike cop and they can communicate better. When you're in a car, you don't have time to stop. You're usually running from one call to another. And when you're on foot, you just don't get in the miles. You're limited to those blocks you're walking in. But on a bicycle, everybody wants to be friendly to you. This is directly from the Los Angeles Police Department. They are really big advocates of this. Now, Los Angeles has a bonus, as do other places like Miami, Florida, and any Atlanta, Georgia. They're warm, and their weather is generally more conducive to having a bicycle cop out there. So that helps a lot, and we up here in the Northeast, we don't use them all the time, although I haven't really checked with the city of Boston to see how often they're on their bikes, if they're on their bikes year-round or not, because they do have so much bicycle traffic up there. It would be useful for them, and I'm sure there are some fairly durable Boston police officers. But when you get into the warmer climates, get out to California, they're using them all year round because they're really a wonderful way of enforcing the law. And then you have to look at what it would take to maintain a fleet. And you need to either approach a local bicycle shop, which you can probably work out some sort of a contract with them to maintain the bicycles. I know that I have a number of bicycle dealers in New England that do that for their local police departments. So you have to look at that, and you have to figure out, you know, what it's going to take to keep the bikes maintained. And it's not a lot. You know, you're going to have flat tires. You're going to have bent wheels because, you know, if you see how the bicycle police officers use their bikes, oh, God, it's not pretty. They throw their bikes down because they're jumping off the bike real quick to apprehend someone. And so they're not real, real kind to the bikes, but they're not real kind to the cars either. And cars cost a lot more money to fix than bicycles do. But you're going to have to replace punctured tubes, bent wheels, worn out brake pads, and other simple things. But it's all very quick and can be repaired very, very easily. And so You want to make sure you get a relationship with your local community bicycle shop, and maybe they can help you out with that. There's a training that is in place, and there are national organizations. I mentioned earlier the International Police Mountain Bike Association, IPMBA, and it trains a multitude of agencies, anywhere from bicycle police to EMTs, which are being used a lot more now on with bicycles because, again, they can get places faster and more effectively. And also, you're starting to see it a little bit more mall security. You see bicycles being used. So if you have a big shopping center or a big shopping mall, the bicycle's a much easier way to get around, a much better way to get around, and a quieter way to get around. So again, if you're a criminal and you are looking to break into a car at a mall, and I'm not saying that this occurs very often, but from the history that I've heard from anyone who has worked in that situation, apparently malls are one of the worst places for car break-ins and theft occurring and damage occurring. And if you're in that car with the little flashing light on the top, which makes everybody feel very, very secure when they go to the shopping center or mall, it can be seen from a long way. And, you know, the people who are doing crime, they know their way around that. But if you're on a bicycle, they just don't know you're there. They really don't know you're there. I know this just from going to our local, very small mall here, because I teach a fitness class in the gym that's in there, and I really have to stay on top of my toes when I'm riding my bike through the parking lot, because no one's looking for bicycles in the parking lot. And that's another thing you should be aware of when you're driving your vehicle in your motorized vehicle in a parking lot. Please keep your eyes open. There could be people actually riding their bikes to the place of business. So anyway, these are all things that you can do. If you have a lot of events in your town, if your town is a very touristy town and has a lot of events, this is a great way to sell a bicycle program to your superior officers. This is definitely a good thing. And it doesn't, again, it doesn't require a huge layout of money. And once you teach the officers how to do it right, it's just amazing the results they get from it. So I mean, I've seen some videos that are on the internet that show the officers actually throwing their bicycles out to you know, stop someone when they're trying to get away, and they'll actually use the bike as a way of detaining someone. It's just wonderful, wonderful idea. So bike patrols, bike police officers, a big shout out to you. We really appreciate what you do, and we'd love to see more of you on bicycles, because it makes sense for all of us. It really, really makes a big difference. We have a little bit more time left today, and I wanted to talk about riding on, I'm going to switch gears here. That's a bicycle term. I'm going to switch gears, and we are going to talk about riding in your first organized ride. There are a lot of organized rides that are around. This is the time of year that, you know, people have been out. They've been riding their bikes a lot. They're starting to get a little more fit. And then they're looking and they're seeing like a big fundraising ride coming up that might be in their area. We have a local one here called the Steeplechase Bike Tour, which is coming up on August 20th. We will have a show about that just before that event in August, where I will have members from the Steeplechase Committee on the air with me, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But anyway, there's that event. There are events for the MS Society. There are events for diabetes. There are events for cancer. Dana-Farber has a huge, huge event called the Pan Mass Challenge. And it is the largest fundraiser for Dana-Farber by bicycle. It's all by bicycle. It's one of their just an enormous fundraiser. It's the largest bicycle fundraising event in the United States right now. It's incredible. And just lots of people go out and they raise a lot of money, and it all goes to a good cause, and they're riding their bikes, and they get people they approach friends and family to, you know, give them a couple of bucks for doing a bike ride. And so anyway, we have the Steeplechase coming up, which is very, very nice. That's a local event, and with lots of local money going back to our organizations here. And anyway, so what do you do to do this? How do you get in shape to do an event like this? Well, you need to look at, first of all, how much are you riding? So if you're going out and you're riding down the street and back, and down the street and back is a couple of miles, so you're going out a mile and you're coming back a mile, you're doing 2 miles, and then you look at this event coming up and it goes, oh my God, look at this. It's a 20, the smallest ride they have is a 20-mile bike ride. I can't ride 20 miles. Well, yes, you can. You can. You just have to increase and work on your training a little bit. It's really not that hard. I have a rule called the 10% rule, which is sometimes I actually follow and sometimes I don't. But I say that what you need to do is you need to take a look at the event that you're going to do, take a look at the date, and you need to work backwards from that date. So if it's a 20-mile bicycle ride that you're going to be doing, and you're going to be looking at increasing your mileage each week and increasing the amount of time you're spending on the bike, you need to kind of work back from that date. So the weekend before that, you're going to have your highest mileage. the weekend before that, a little bit less, and then a little bit less, and a little bit less. So you really kind of have to look at it over a, you know, like a 6 week or 8 week program is good. 12 weeks is best, but you want to look at, you know, working your way up. Now, that's just on a 20-mile ride. Of course, you can also do, there's all different levels of rides out there. A lot of them are metric centuries, which are 100 kilometers or 62.5 miles, or some of them are even 100 miles, which is just really big deal. But there are, you know, if you're riding your bike as regularly as Fran and I ride our bikes, then you're going to look at that like, oh, yeah, I can do that. But we've also built up to it. We didn't start riding 100 miles in March. We worked our way up to it, and every week we add a little bit more mileage on the weekends, and we get a little bit more under our belts. I like to look at it less as miles and more as hours, if you can. But just look at increasing your time on the bike. You'll be up to it faster than you realize. What's the one thing you shouldn't do? What a lot of people do. They dust the bike off 2 days before, and then they go out and they do the event. Bad idea. First of all, you may not have a properly operating bicycle. And then you're going to go down to the local bike shop, and you're going to say, I need it for Saturday. And they're going to look at you and say, we're backed up 3 weeks. We can't do that for Saturday, but I have this event. Think ahead, folks. Just think ahead. You want to think ahead not only in your training, but also think ahead as far as the condition of your bicycle. So the condition of you and your bicycle, they're both critical in this situation. And it's a wonderful way to get out and raise a little extra money. You know, if you ask if you're going to do a 20-mile bicycle ride as your fundraiser, if you go find 20 friends or family members and each get them to give you a dollar, then you'll have $20 that you can donate toward an event. If you're looking for more, you can ask for a little larger donation. But you know, it's all donation, and it's all for good causes. So it's a good thing to do. It's a really good thing to do. Plus, you're going to meet a whole bunch of like-minded people. One thing I find about the big organized rides, especially ones that are fundraisers, is that everybody is really nice. Everybody really, they love to ride their bikes, and they love the idea of going out and doing bicycle rides and walkathons and different things like that so that they can help out their community. It's a way to get involved in your community. It's a way to meet more people. It's a really, really wonderful thing. And the other things you have to look at is well, you're looking at your physical fitness here, so you really have to pay attention to your nutrition, and you have to pay attention to knowing, well, how much do I eat? What do I have to do? How do I get ready for this? What do I do? Hydration is probably the thing that Fran and I see as the biggest violation of people when they're going for a ride. If they are not hydrated properly, they are going to have a problem. It's not they might, it is they will. And it doesn't seem to matter the length of the ride. If you're not properly hydrated, you're just asking for a lot of trouble. So you want to focus on your hydration. Well, how do I focus on my hydration? Well, you drink. You drink some water. You drink electrolyte drinks. You drink things that will help keep you fueled. And you start the day before your event, not just on the day of the event. Now, you're also going to do it on the day of the event. You're going to keep yourself really well hydrated. But if I find that when I talk to people about when I talk to people about getting ready for an event, I tell them that if you have hydrated properly, if you actually are paying attention and doing it right, then you may have to get up once or twice in the middle of the night, and you may have to use the bathroom, which is a great sign because then you know you're hydrated. You know you're going in at least with a full tank of fluid in your body, excuse me. So you are going to, and then when you get up in the morning, you just start drinking again. You just want to keep the fluid in the body. Stay with it. I tell people the same thing when I'm teaching an indoor cycling class or a spin class. I tell them that they should really begin hydration at least an hour, sometimes 2 hours before the class, so that they don't run into a problem. Why do you want to do this? Because dehydration will stop you in your tracks. You will get cramps. You will get fatigued much faster. It just really is a key element of the ride. The other thing is, depending on the length of the ride, proper nutrition is critical. Everyone is a little bit different on this one, but I have to, if I'm going for a long ride, I've got to have a sizable breakfast in the morning. I've really got to have a lot of fuel in my tank. But I metabolize food faster than some people do. Other people are a little bit slower with that, and they can't eat as much. If you can't eat as much, then you need to eat more while you are riding on the bicycle, and you need to eat on a regular basis. I'm talking about a little bit longer ride here than a 15 or 20 mile ride. I'm talking about when people are getting involved in more like, 30, 40, and 50 mile rides. You got to keep the fuel in the body. You will feel a lot better, and you will hold up much, much better in the long run. So make sure that you stay hydrated. Make sure you eat right. And then find a buddy. Find somebody out there that would like to join you and do this ride together and work with one another and say, hey, are you getting ready for the ride coming up next month? And, well, I know I told you I would go, but I just haven't been riding. Well, come on, let's ride on Tuesday mornings. Let's ride on Friday evenings. Let's ride on Sunday, whatever. Make plans. Get people involved with you. If you get people involved with you, like any exercise, you will have a much more successful time of it if you have a buddy. So that's another way to get yourself ready for riding your first organized ride. Big issues, I think I've pretty much covered as far as condition of the bicycle needs to be very good. The condition of you is very helpful. It's helpful to be in very good shape. You want to make sure you eat properly and hydrate properly. These are all major concerns when you're riding your first organized ride. And get out and do it. It's fun. You'll be really surprised. It can be a great, great time. People are very festive. There's usually food afterwards. A lot of people gather afterwards and just chat about it and what they saw and how they enjoyed their ride and what it was all about. Again, we have a large fundraiser, a ride that is right here local in northeastern Connecticut called the Steeplechase. And it is online. You can look it up at steeplechasebiketour.org. That's all one word. And you can check it out there. Or you can go to Facebook, and there is actually a Facebook page there that is dedicated to the Steeplechase Bike Tour. It is their 25th year anniversary, so it's a really big deal, and we'd like to make a lot out of it this year. So please consider this. The other thing you might want to go on to the Facebook page, I've been out taking photos of different points along the way on different rides that we are running. And you might want to just check and see, because I go, where am I now? It's kind of like, where's Waldo? Well, it's where's Pedalin' Ron? That's what it is. And you can guess, and you can add your input to it. And so anyway, let's think about that. Think about that. At this point, we're about to sign off. We have to wrap things up. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business. I'd like you to have a safe and wonderful day. May the wind be at your back. And remember, every day is a great day to ride your bike.